new CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I feel it in my soul. I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
I'm Kim Grinnell of DogBand.com with Chris Vetter, Scott Eklund. Alamo Bowl, just press conference this morning with Steve Sarkisian and Kalen DeBoer. A little weird. I still just can't get used to those Texas colors, but we had a press conference with those guys today. We'll talk about Michael Penix and the impact of him coming back, as well as some of the pending decisions on guys at University of Washington that may go to the NFL. Recruiting updates, portal updates, and big basketball game at 6 o'clock tomorrow with Gonzaga, and that's on Fetters. Have we decided if whether it's Root Plus or the same thing? Have we decided on that yet?
I think it's just Root. I looked on Fubo. It's on Fubo. So anybody that's got Fubo can see the game.
Yeah, no, it was kind of confusing, but it was just a couple days ago. We actually got a start time on that. It was TBD for a while, but, you know, let's jump back to the press conference today. We had a Zoom call with Steve Sarkisian and Coach Kalen DeBoer. I think the only thing we got out of that, really, Chris, was Washington's the home team, which means they'll be wearing what?
Probably wearing purple, I would imagine. I mean, which would be good. I mean, that would be the good. I mean, Texas is pretty known for wearing white, so that would make sense to me.
When they played Baylor, Washington was the away team. They wore all whites. So
yeah,
this is their chance to be in all purple or purple and gold.
Yeah, last time that Washington played, I mean, it was epic. And we've talked about this before. What was it, 67-56 with RG3 and Keith Price? And then after the game, Washington pretty much fired their entire defensive coaching staff.
Yeah. No, that's one thing that Sark didn't talk about today, was definitely the aftermath of that, and really no reason to hash it. But definitely he talked about Washington's offense and what Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubb are doing right now in pretty glowing terms. He said he wanted to try to see if he could get DeBoer off to the side and see if he could do kind of a little mini coaching clinic for him to talk about their offense, because you know, clearly, if there is another 67-56 game on the horizon, these two teams are capable of doing it.
See, I just remember that being a real high-scoring game, but I didn't remember it was 67. I didn't remember 67. I just remember it was just – did anybody punt? Was there any punts in that game, Chris?
Yeah, there was at least one, because I remember Kasem Williams had a pretty decent punt return, didn't he? I thought he had a really good punt return that set Washington up, and we thought they were going to end up going in and scoring and either tying it, or I can't remember what it was, but or maybe he did actually set them up so that they could draw closer, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but I do know Kasem Williams had a big punt return.
Scott, the big thing that everybody was, you know, in person at the conference today was, you know, trying to get out of Steve Sarkisian on who's going to play and who's not going to play. They've got several guys that could go to the NFL. Headlining is Bijan Robinson. Do you think, you know, he's the running back? Washington recruited him. I didn't, like I said in the previous podcast, I didn't think he was that big. He's 220 pounds. He's a big dude.
Yeah. And I mean, it's already been said that he's coming back. So I expect him to play.
Are you sure about that?
That's what was out on the internet. I mean, as much as you can trust the internet, I guess.
I thought he was still up in the air.
I've just been scanning. I haven't seen read the story or anything. But anyway, I do expect him to play if he does stay. I mean, I just don't know if he – I don't know if he's staying or not. So the big thing is, you know, they've got like eight starters who are supposedly guys that were looking at possibly going to the NFL. And if they don't end up playing, now the thing about Texas is, unlike Washington, who has like three stars and maybe is a little thin in depth, Texas has a bunch of four and five star guys in their depth. So you're just replacing a four star guy with possibly a younger five star guy, you know, that just didn't overtake him yet. So a lot of depth there and talent at Texas, but, you know, hasn't been developed. You know, on the defensive side of the ball, Pete Kwiatkowski, there isn't much better than him as a defensive coordinator. And Jeff Choate is there, former Husky D-line coach. He's there. So those guys do a good job of developing. And Steve Sarkisian's always a really good game planner and gets the most out of his offense. So Washington's going to, regardless of whether eight guys end up transferring, or I'm sorry, not transferring, but end up going to the NFL early and don't play, regardless of whether that happens, Washington's going to have a huge task on their hands stopping this team.
Anybody that Bijan Robinson reminds you of, either you or Chris?
Well, he's a classic Texas running back. I mean, I wouldn't say he's the same as like a Ricky Williams or any of those types of guys, but he's just super, super productive. I think, what did he run for, 1,400 yards this year? And just as you said, 225 pounds, he can get the job done outside in between the tackles. I mean, he's just a very good all around back. And, you know, Roshon Johnson's another guy that they were talking about might turn pro too. And talking to Sark, you know, he certainly seemed to intimate in this press conference that it wasn't just those guys, but any of those guys, as Scott said, those eight guys, you know, they're going day by day on these guys. He goes, they've got incredible decisions to make, and they're just trying to get the information that they need to make the best decisions for themselves. So it's really, he made it seem like it was a 50-50 choice for a lot of these guys right now.
Kim, Kim, you asked who he reminds me of. Maybe a little Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit. Because he can catch the ball pretty well, and he's really good at running between the tackles, and he's got enough speed once he gets in the open field.
What about the current Georgia guy, Kendall Milton? Do you mind?
I haven't seen him enough to. I saw Joe Mixon so many times that's who he reminds me of. But I haven't seen Kendall Milton enough yet.
And Scott, the other guy that I think Washington's just really scared of is another guy that Washington recruited, Xavier Worthy, the wide receiver.
Oh, yeah.
With world-class speed. Is that a guy you're just going to go, man, how are they going to – I can see how you can stop Bijan Robinson, but how are you going to stop Xavier Worthy?
Yeah, I know. And they don't just get him the ball on long passes. They get him the ball short, and then he'll hit with his running ability. He can just take it the distance too. So, I mean, we saw it against – Oklahoma in the last 2 years, and he's done it several times this year as well. So he's one that fans should definitely be a little bit worried about.
Now, but with Worthy though, isn't it with him? That's just portal, right? He's not old enough to go into the NFL yet. Is he only a year or two out of high
school? It's 2 years. This is his second year, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So I think they were talking about maybe he.
Well,
was
hold on. He was at Michigan. And was he just there for spring ball? Because I know he was at Michigan.
Yeah, but wasn't he at Michigan for a year, and then he's been at Texas for a year?
For no, 2 years.
Okay.
No, I think he's draft eligible.
Yeah, okay. I think he is too.
Yeah, Insider Report, Texas wide receiver Xavier Worthy is leaning towards staying, but that's a guy that Washington was in on really, really hard, and then it just seemed like when that list got cut down, it was all the big boys, Scott.
Yeah, well, it was Oregon, Washington, Michigan, and then I think one other school, or maybe Texas. And he chose to go to Michigan and just didn't like it there. Maybe it was the offense he didn't like. I don't know what it was, but he just decided not to stay there, went down to Texas to play for Sark. And maybe he had a previous relationship with Sark. I don't know. But whatever it was, he's gone down there, and he's become a really, really big-time player for them.
Is he the fastest player in college football?
I have no idea. He's fast. He's faster than anybody that Washington has, I'll tell you that.
Or has played.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably. No, that I think that's going to be the interesting
Well, matchup. What about Dante Thornton's pretty good, pretty fast guy too. And Those running backs are super quick, too.
I'm talking about fast on the football field, not fast on entering the portal, Scott. Come on now.
Okay. All right.
Dante Thornton, of course, entered the transfer portal, the wide receiver from Oregon. But, yeah, no, I just think this is a real, real interesting matchup with Texas and Washington. And what did I see that the several people said, other than the, you know, the New Year's Day 6, this is probably the most intriguing bowl game out there.
It was funny, though. Sark said that Washington's a top 10 team, and that's not actually true. So if they're close, and I'm sure that a lot of Washington fans think that they're a top 10 team and should be, but it's interesting to see Sark already kind of playing the role of Luke Holtz and hyping the Huskies up to no end. I mean, he certainly had plenty to say about their offense, and rightly so. I mean, there's a lot of good things going on there, but I thought it was interesting that Sark, you know, noted that they are apparently a top 10 team. So maybe that's a way to get his team motivated.
How much do you think Sark has changed, Scott, since he's left here?
I think he's gotten a little more perspective and figured out that what's most important is the job he does on the field. And he's done a really good job of bringing in guys that can coach. You know, when he first got to the University of Washington and he went down to LA to coach at USC, his coaching tree wasn't very high. He hadn't worked at a lot of places with big time coaches yet other than USC. And I mean, a lot of that was just the good old boy network for Trojan guys. And so, you know, I think he's just matured. I think he's got some life work balance and hopefully he's got perspective. I mean, we're not around him enough to know if he's possibly slipping back into some of the things that he used to do. I sure hope he isn't. And everything that we know is he's on the straight and narrow and he's getting it done. You know, he's won 8 games and he's trying to bring Texas back. And, you know, he went out and got the best defensive coordinator he could find. And that's in Pete Kwiatkowski, who struggled last year. But that's because he was implementing his system. This year, they're playing a lot better defense.
Well, one thing Sark was noted for here at Washington, he could recruit. And he may not have the wins on the record right now, but he's had a couple of dynamic recruiting classes. So kind of like Dion says, I'm coming. And I think he's coming as well.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, I mean, is he making inroads in SEC territory? Because that's where, you know, where he's going to be able to find a lot of talent too. And he's going to be playing, you know, an SEC schedule. Is it next year? Is it 2024?
I think
2024, 2025, whatever it is. I said next year, I meant 2 years from now, but, you know, I've just always respected Steve Sarkisian for his offensive abilities. And I thought he was exactly what Washington needed. I don't know if he's the winning, you know, if he's a guy who's going to take you to a championship, but boy, he's a guy who can get you right and get you a lot of talent in your program and then kind of go from there.
Hey, Chris, how old was Sark when he came to Washington? You know, I kind of look at how young he was, and then you try to think about Dan Lanning and how young he was, and then the mistakes both of them made, you know, early in their career. The difference is, you know, Sark took over, you know, a zero-win program. Lanning came in with a lot of talent. But how old was Sark? Do you remember?
I don't remember, and I don't know how you can forget 2008.
I want to say he was 36. I'm pretty sure he was 36.
Yeah, but all I remember is Sark's first year, because Lanning is just lambasted for those fourth down calls he made. But when Sark, his first year here, remember how often he went for it on fourth down?
I don't, but I mean, at the same time, I mean, you know, talking today, he certainly had nothing but fond memories about it and had great things to say about Washington and certainly talked about the idea of leaving Washington in a better place than he found it, which I'm not sure there's a coach out there that couldn't have done that, but he certainly did that. There's no doubt about it. But yeah, he probably made a lot of mistakes along the way. And, you know, listening to him today, he certainly – I agree a lot with what Scott said. I think he still kind of showed the sense of humor he's always had. And I think the perspective is certainly there. I know he probably came to Washington with a lot of concrete ideas about his philosophy and the way he wanted to do things. And now it sounds to me like he's gained enough perspective to know that he doesn't know everything And so even when asked about the players like Robinson and Roschon Johnson and whether they were going to play or not, or, you know, the decisions they've got to make, you know, he just talked about, you know, trying to get through the day and making sure that they were, you know, winning today and making sure that they were getting better today and all those types of things. Same thing. He was asked about the, you know, mid-year signing period and whether he would change anything as far as recruiting and the portal and NIL and all that. And he's like, guys, I don't have any answers for you there. I'm just trying to do the best we can with the rules that the way they are now. So I think he's definitely gotten some perspective over the years.
Hey, Chris, when you talk about, you know, going from Washington to the pressure cooker known as USC and the amount of pressure he was under down there, where do you think there's more pressure to win, USC or Texas?
Oh, Texas, without question, Texas. Yeah. No, USC's Southern California. I mean, I know it gets the rep of being laid back and things like that. And obviously there are tons of expectations at USC. There's no question about that. All that said, though, he had been to USC before. He had been a big part of that winning tradition under Pete Carroll. So when he was going back as a favorite son. When he was going to Texas, he was going to Texas as a guy that was expected to win. And he was coming from Alabama. He was coming from, you know, being under the wing of Nick Saban. He was supposed to be that guy that was supposed to be the offensive savant, supposed to come in and, you know, improve things right away. And that obviously hasn't happened. So, you know, I'm sure that the clock is still ticking for him.
I don't know if you remember this. I'm going to pull one out way from the past, Chris. Jeff Shelton. I remember talking to Jeff Shelton's dad, and I'm sure you remember him. But Jeff took and the family took a trip down to Texas, a recruiting visit down there. And they said they went into Mac Brown's office, and he said it was the biggest office I've ever been to. And they got to this big table, and they undid all these blueprints. And he said, let me show you how we do things at Texas. And they showed him all the facility plans, and he just raved about, yeah, they do things different down in Texas.
Do you remember
that?
Well, yeah, and you know, he's also been a part of the renovation stuff, and he was a big part of the renovation stuff for Husky Stadium, because that happened right in the middle of his tenure, and so, you know, all that stuff was going on, and so he got a chance to design his own office with the bathroom and all that stuff going on.
The recruiting lounge was
sure. Sorry. No question about it. And so I guarantee you there is no doubt that whatever happened at Husky Stadium during that renovation, everything else, when he got to Texas, I'm sure it blew it completely out of the water. Because when they say everything is bigger in Texas, they mean it.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, yeah. So looking forward to that game. But Scott, I want to switch topics right now. And then, you know, you broke down the impact of Michael Penix returning, because everybody just kind of looks on the surface. But we've always been, okay, what does it mean? And with Michael Penix coming back, it's just kind of you. It's easy to go down a rabbit hole on what it means. But I think you broke it down really, really good. Not only what it means to the current roster, but, you know, guys possibly coming back to play with him, and then the impact it has on recruiting as well. Talk a little bit overall. Just give me a blanket, just how big Michael Penix returning is and how big of an impact it's going to make on this program, because you know they're going to put together a Heisman campaign like Washington's never done before.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the biggest impact, I mean, at least immediately, is going to be on the media department, because if they weren't ramping things up before for a possible Heisman run, they definitely are now. And he's going to be out in front of the cameras quite a bit. And I don't know how comfortable Michael Penix is about being in front of the camera. He's not uncomfortable when you talk to him, but he rarely talks about himself. It's almost always about the team, the offense, overall, and all those things. And he just likes to go out and play football. So I don't know how comfortable he's going to be out there in front of everything, but he's going to be talked about from as long as he's healthy going into the season, he's going to be talked about by every pundit, by every analyst that's out there. Kirk Herbstreit, all of the ESPN guys are going to be talking about him. Fox will be talking about him. Chris Peterson will probably be talking about him on, you know, all those different things. Rick Neuheisel. Everybody's going to be talking about Michael Penix is one of the favorites for the Heisman heading into the season next year.
You can't buy that kind of publicity.
No, not at all. And the other thing is too, then when you look about how it impacts things on the field, I talked about in the article that I wrote on him that I thought that Jalen McMillan and Romo Dunze were definitely on the out. They were definitely looking at going to the NFL early. Neither one of them's ready, in my opinion, but both of them are looking at leaving. I think you're more than likely going to get both of those guys to stay. If one leaves, it'll be Rome Odunze, but I still think there's a very good chance that he ends up staying. When you've got a quarterback who throws the way Michael Penix does and the rapport that he's worked out with these guys, you can't buy that. That's something that only develops over time, and it's only going to get better the longer he throws with these guys. So I think that's big. I think it's big for the possibility of getting Troy Fa'utanu to return, the left tackle. I think Washington's got a great shot to get him back. If you can get him and Roger Rosengarten back, then you've got Mateo Mele, who did not start this year, but he played a lot. So he'll be playing the center. So you've got three guys that with starting experience and a lot of experience who are going to be playing on that offensive line. And then you got to fill in Nate Kaleppo and possibly Kieran Hatchett at left and right guard and possibly get some other guys in there too. So I think that's where it impacts a lot of things. And then how it impacts the defense. You know, it sounds weird to say a quarterback impacting the defense, but when a quarterback can help you score quickly and often, it puts a lot of pressure on the opposing offense to do a lot of different things. And I think that's one of the reasons Dan Lanning went for it when he did against the University of Washington, you know, fourth and one at his own, what was it, 29, 39, whatever it was. And then other teams did the same thing and felt the pressure. And Washington was able to get some stops on defense because it made other teams one-dimensional. So a lot of different ways that he's going to impact this program, besides the fact that he's just a really cool kid. And, you know, I say kid, he's almost 24. I think he is 24 years old. So, you know, I mean, he's just a really cool guy. And his teammates all seem to love him. The coaches love him. He's a producer. And I think he's a model spokesman for this program.
Hey, Chris, you know, just looking forward with Penix coming back and you look at that schedule next year and then you think of ESPN game day, possibly one or possibly two games that Washington could be on their game day, because you know that USC game down in LA with the, you know, possible two front runners for the Heisman on game day down at USC. And then if Bo Nix comes back, that Oregon Washington game could be incredible, and game day returning for a second time up here. That's the kind of publicity you can't buy. But just, you know, I think that USC matchup next year, that's going to be huge.
Well, it is going to be huge for obvious reasons, because it certainly looks like Caleb Williams is going to be the Heisman Trophy winner. I mean, he's already won the Player of the Year. I think the AP reported on it, you know, their College Player of the Year. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be kind of crazy. I mean, you start right away, you host Boise State, which is going to be no pushover, and then you host Tulsa, which ironically enough just hired Ohio State's offensive coordinator. So there's connections there with, I'm sure Scott will talk about it, recruiting a little bit later with Lincoln Kienholz. But then also at Michigan State, that's already circled as a red letter game, because anytime you can go on the road at somewhere in the Big Ten, you know that's going to be high profile, big time atmosphere in East Lansing, and he's going to have a lot to prove already. So Scott talked about it in terms of not just Penix returning, but how that can impact other players, especially guys like Odunze and McMillan. Odunze was on KGR earlier this week, guys. He said that Penix returning makes a huge impact into his final decision. So we'll see. But I think him coming back is part of the bigger plan. And whether these guys will confirm it or not, or will ever talk about it maybe after the fact, I guarantee you these guys have had talks. They've had to have had talks, not just in the locker room, but like serious discussions with family members and all this stuff. Because this stuff, the stuff that Penix just did, has huge ripple effects in this program.
No, it's just it's gigantic. And then you take a look at even the transfer portal and then how it's impacting recruiting, especially quarterbacks on the roster. It's kind of funny that when Penix announced he was coming back with the video, it started out seeming like he was going to leave. And then he announced he's coming back. And the only two people that knew about it were Michael Penix and the video guy. And even the coaches didn't know. And you just wonder, sitting in that team meeting, how it made Dylan Morris and Sam Huard feel. I don't think we're going to lose Sam Huard, but and I don't think that Dylan Morris is going anywhere either. But they're short on quarterbacks on the roster right now, Scott.
They are. And, I think so. This is one thing I didn't mention, if Penix had left, if he had decided to leave, Washington was definitely going to be in the mix for a transfer portal quarterback. But now that he's coming back, and if you can talk Dylan Morris and Sam Huard into returning, who I believe the coaches would like both to return, and you can get Lincoln Keynolt stand up signing with you and enrolling next summer. You know, I think Washington's going to be in good shape at their quarterback spot. But, you know, even if Lincoln Keenholz doesn't end up signing with the University of Washington, Washington could go out and get a fourth guy who's a grad transfer, maybe who they're like, you know, or maybe even a guy who's like a redshirt freshman or sophomore and just say, hey, we've got our starter for this year, but you can be a year in the system and battle for it starting in the spring of 2024. And I think that might be appealing to some guys who might be interested.
Chris, three quarterbacks on the roster is not ideal.
Well, it's not ideal. And they've even said as much, and they said as much last spring, that having three quarterbacks is not ideal, scholarship guys. And so I think that's why they went out and tried to get a couple guys that could impact their roster, even in terms of walk-on guys that are important scout type guys and whatnot. And I think they're still going to be out there looking for those types of guys. But I think Scott's right. I know a lot of people are really concerned about Keynolds and rightly so. I mean, when a team like Ohio State calls, you're going to take their call and you're going to find out what they're all about. I'll be very curious to see what happens because of Kevin Wilson and the Ohio State offensive coordinator going to Tulsa, seeing how that impacts things and whether or not that means Keenholz decides to wait until February to sign anywhere to see who Ohio State signs to be their offensive coordinator, for instance. The other thing I would say is just generally speaking, I agree 100% again with Scott on even if they lost Keenholz, the idea that there are going to be guys that are in the portal that have maybe redshirted or have played a year in a system that they really, really like. And they can absolutely recruit the heck out of that group because you've got two semi-experienced guys, one very experienced guy in Dylan Morris, one lesser experienced guy in Sam Huard. Now, if you get a guy that's maybe only had a year in a program, but you can bring them along and develop them in the portal, I guarantee you there are going to be players out there that have very similar skill sets to a guy like a Lincoln Keenholz that they can develop. And so there are ways to get around that now because the portal gives them so many options.
Scott, Lincoln Keenholz isn't exactly enamored with dealing with the media and the recruiting process, but what can you update people on Lincoln Keenholz right now?
Well, and it's funny because I texted with him and I just said, hey, I know you're not a fan of doing interviews. I just was wondering when the Huskies were going to be in home with you and when Ohio State's going to be in home. And I specifically said, I think I said the head coaches, because the assistant coach can have an in-home every week with him. Just you can only have it once a week, but you can have it every week. And so I don't know you know, how many times Washington's going to try and meet with him between now and signing day, which is on the 21st. So we're, 13 days away from that. But Washington did their in-home, and that includes Kalen DeBoer, supposedly did it last weekend. and he said it went really well. And then he said Ohio State, and he means Coach Day, is supposed to be in there not this weekend, but the following weekend, so the weekend before signing day. And that's going to be real telling to see if they're able to talk him into signing with them, or they might even just want to get him to hold off so they can see what CJ Stroud ends up doing. So I think a lot of it's going to really depend on, you know, how these in-home visits go. And I agree with Chris. I think there's a very good chance that he might not sign in December.
Signing day is what, the 21st, Scott?
Yeah.
And then it's a window that they can sign in. Is that correct?
Yeah, 3 days.
It's a 3-day window. So between the 21st and the 24th, and if he doesn't sign then,
or
then the
next. I'm sorry, Kim. It might be just it's the 21st to the 23rd. So 3 full days.
If he doesn't sign at that period of time, then the next signing period is starts the first Wednesday in February.
Yes, correct.
And then is that pretty much that's an open signing period after
it's open until, I think, Chris, you might know this off the top of your head, but I think it's sometime in May, like mid-May.
Historically, it's been until mid-April.
Mid-April, that's what it is. Okay.
Yeah, so just gun to your head, does Lincoln Keenhold sign a letter of intent in December?
No. If you said, Scott, I'm going to shoot, if you're wrong, I think the percentages lean toward him not signing.
It's a little difficult for us to really get a handle on things, you know, and our sources are just saying they're right in there. I just, my gut says, and this is hard for people, he may not be leaning one way or another. Sometimes kids just honestly don't know.
I think he's torn, because I think the big thing is, you know, one thing he said to me in the one time he granted me an interview, I could be wrong on this, but I think I'm the only non-South Dakota media person that's actually talked to him in the last 6 months. I could be wrong on that, but I think that's what it was. And he basically said to me, he's like, hey, I guess Steve Wiltfong did too, so sorry about that. But anyway, he basically said to me, he goes, it's Ohio State. They're hard to say no to, you know? And when you're a kid, when you're 17 and you don't live near a school, you didn't grow up a fan of the University of Washington or anything like that, I can totally get why Ohio State would be appealing, even if they have the number one guy committed to them for 2024. You know, Lincoln Kineholtz doesn't care about that. I think Lincoln Kineholtz thinks that, hey, if I go in there and they give me an opportunity to win that job, I'm going to win it. And I don't care if the guys in front of me or behind me are 5-star guys and number one overall recruits, I'm going to win it. And I think so. I really just think that he loves Washington. He loves the staff. He feels very comfortable with them. They're Midwest guys. Him and DeBoer are Midwest guys. You know, DeBoer and Grubb are Midwest guys, and they're from the same state, and they get him. And I think he likes the offense. I think he knows that they stuck with him and everything like that. But when you have a team, regardless of whether Ohio State quarterbacks have actually done well in the NFL or not, is kind of irrelevant. They've all gone in the first round. And, I mean, even bad quarterbacks from them who just are awful went in the first round. And that's because of what they're able to do when they're at Ohio State. Even if he stinks, he's still going to get a huge paycheck coming out of college, something that he may never have to work for the rest of his life if he gets that contract. And so I can understand why it would be appealing to somebody who did not grow up a fan of the University of Washington.
And just, hey guys, but real quick, Kim, guys, in general, my question on all this is, and I agree, Scott, in general, if you don't know, if you're in Lincoln Keenholz's situation, and you don't know who your coordinator is going to be at one of the schools you're looking at, ideally you would want to wait to see how that gets resolved, right? What my question is it because it's the quarterback, because there's only so many chairs that are available to these guys, whether you're looking at high school kids, portal kids, whatever, what I'm wondering is he going to be given the luxury of being able to wait? because I'm wondering if you're Washington or Ohio State, are you putting this kid's feet to the fire and going, hey, we want you now, but we need a decision now, because you're seeing all these portal guys and they could be going to you know, school A, B, C, D, E, while you're waiting for him to make a decision. Yep. And now all of a sudden he can leave you high and dry. So I'm wondering if he's going to be given the luxury to be allowed to wait until February.
So you're wondering if he's going to get Brett Rippened.
Yeah, I wonder. I honestly wonder whether he's going to be given the luxury. Because let's say you're Ryan Grubb. You're sitting here going, we put our blood, sweat, and tears into this recruitment only to get one-upped potentially by Ohio State. We need to know where we're at. We need to know, are you in or out, so that if we need to go into the portal, we have as much time as we can to go through this whole thing and get the best guy that we can get that's available. Because the quarterbacks, those guys are going fast.
I am sure that they're looking at other quarterbacks, and if they get close on another quarterback, they're going to go to Keenholz, and Ohio State's going to do the same thing. Hey, you know, we've got this out, and we need to know if you're coming. Fine, we'll drop the other guy, but if you can't make a decision, we're going to go with the other guy. That point's going to come at some point, unless he signs in the early signing period.
And that's why I agree with Scott. In theory, it makes sense for him to wait. I think in reality, I don't know if he's going to be given an opportunity to wait.
And that's a good point, Chris. I didn't even contemplate that. But the other thing is, too, and everybody says, well, he's got his offensive coordinator on staff at the University of Washington. He can know. But who knows if Ryan Grubb's even going to be here 2 years from now? You know, I mean, that's a selling point that Ohio State can say, hey, Ryan Grubb might not be at Washington in 2 years. We're going to hire a guy who's going to be with you for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, too, guys. We always, you know, we always talk about in recruiting generally, you've got to find the place that's the best fit for you when you take football out of the equation. Because that's the one constant. You know, the school is not going to move, but the coaches can. And so you've kind of got to look at it dispassionately and take the football out of it. But what's the reality is? The reality that there's no way that happens. They always try to create that relationship with their coaches because that's the bond, and that's the guy that they're going to be dealing with for the next 3 to 4 years. So that's important as well, no doubt.
It's the game of chicken that comes down to the final, you know, few days of recruiting, because we're coming right up on that early signing period. But if he doesn't sign, that game of chicken's going to go on a little bit longer. So we'll see where it goes. But hey, Scott, I wanted to touch bases on Ohio State's quarterback situation. They had a quarterback committed, one of the best in the country, and he decommitted. And where did he go?
Florida State. I'm drawing a blank on his name right now, but he went to Florida State.
And then there were some rumors that Ohio State was looking at Drake May, the quarterback from Carolina, and it looks like he's come out and said he's staying at Carolina.
Yep. And if that would have, if May had been open to going into the portal and possibly going to Ohio State, I think that Keenholz probably ends up signing with Washington, because he knows.
And one more thing, guys. They also have committed one of the top 2024 quarterbacks already.
Raiola.
So there's already another guy in the pipeline.
Yeah, Raiola.
That guy couldn't show up early, could he?
Reclassify?
Yeah.
Reclassify? Not to my knowledge, but I mean, I didn't know JT Daniels was going to do it. I didn't know Quinn Ewers was going to do it. So anything is possible.
Well, the thing we don't know, Scott, is I don't know if you have. I haven't heard of any other quarterbacks on Washington's radar. Have you?
No. I guess the ones I've heard of that they were at least putting out feelers for were Childs, who Washington brought in for an official visit. He's committed to Oregon State. And then, again, you're catching me off guard a little bit, but it's the kid who's committed to Washington State right now. I know they put out some feelers on him too.
Looks like he's taking a visit to Michigan State this weekend, by the way, Scott.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He just got offered by Michigan State. So
Yeah. It's the quarterback merry-go-round. And the thing is, so let's say worst case scenario, Washington doesn't get Keenholz. Keenholz goes to Ohio State. Worst case scenario, Washington could get him on the rebound. I mean, he goes in and signs, and then he sees that Ryan Day doesn't really give him the time of day no pun intended, but you know, when this new guy when Raiola comes in and they're all enamored with him, Keenels could say, screw you guys, I'm going back where the school that loved me before.
Well, that makes total sense, guys, but that doesn't solve their problem of what to do right now.
Yeah,
and
but
that goes back to the whole beginning thing that Kim talked about. You can't just play a whole season with three scholarship quarterbacks.
Well, they did it.
Well, it's tenable. You can maybe get away from it for a year, but there was legitimate ideas as to why they couldn't do it on a short recruiting thing and all that stuff, because they had already brought in one guy from the portal in Penix. So now with a whole recruiting cycle behind them, if they ended up without a quarterback, that's pretty criminal. That's not something that they want to do, obviously.
And then how about if they lose Keenholz and then one of the quarterbacks at Washington decides to transfer out?
Well, here's the thing. If Keenholz doesn't sign with Washington, does that change the math for Dylan Morris or Sam Huard if either one of them was thinking about going somewhere else? To me, it would. But again, you don't necessarily want to be beholden in your particular situation to what everyone else is doing. Again, it's that musical chairs. There's only so many chairs to go around. And if you're the Washington staff, you absolutely cannot be one of those schools without a chair. I mean, you're already thin enough as it is.
Chris, it's kind of funny with this early signing period and schools getting most of their commitments done early in the process. When it was February, it just seemed like we had a lot longer and a lot crazy season. But with what's going on with Keenholz in the quarterback situation, it's almost reminding me of that crazy season we used to have.
Well, it's getting shorter and shorter because now guys can take official visits in May and June, July. I think honestly, it's going to, and I don't remember if Chris Peterson may have been an advocate of this. I know he was an advocate for 5 full years of eligibility. I know that. But I thought maybe he was in step with what Rich Rodriguez had always proposed for years and years and years. And that was, if a kid takes a visit to your school and he wants to commit, let him sign right there and then. If he wants to sign, let him sign. And you remember a few years back, guys, when Clemson had like 25 guys sign scholarship papers, not letters of intent, but scholarship papers,
yes,
which didn't bind the player, but it bound the school. And what that did is that allowed them to publicize it. That allowed them to pump them up, to promote them, to make them feel like they were part of the team. I'm kind of surprised that that hasn't happened more and more. That was like, maybe that was just a fad. But
well, I'm a big fan. I'm sorry, Chris. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'm a big fan of the signing and it locking the player in and the school. I'm a big fan of that because a lot of these schools are offering these kids and then they dump them later on because they didn't have a good senior season. If a school is stupid enough to take kids that early, then guess what? You own it. And you get to take them.
Colorado.
And I think that a lot of this other stuff, like, you know, Nebraska for years and years and years has always offered like 300 kids. We've seen Oregon offer tons and tons and tons of kids. You know, there's that thing where they play that kind of game. And, you know, if you offer a kid, that should be legitimate. That should actually have teeth. That should mean something. And that's why I'm wondering if we'll ever come to the point where the NCAA says, hey, if you've offered a kid and he wants to take it, that's on you. That should be binding. And if they want to do that right away, then they should have the option to do that.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Fun times we're in now with NIL, transfer portal, and all this kind of stuff. But it's definitely changed the way we do business. But two guys from Washington entering the portal. Expecting any more before the bowl game, Scott or Chris?
I am, yes. I think we're gonna hear about at least one or two more. We'll have to wait and see, but I'm thinking that we're gonna see at least one or two more. We expected a lot more on Monday, and it didn't happen. So
yeah, I expected more, but yeah, I think with two now, I think if they end up with maybe five total before the bowl game is played,
yeah,
that sounds about right to me. But again, you know, I just think that there's such a good feeling around the culture and the program right now. Yes, there are going to be a few players that either see the writing on the wall, see the depth chart, see whatever they need to see, whether they're just feeling like they need to get closer to home or whatever their personal situation is. There's going to be guys that will leave, and and fans will wonder why. They're like, my God, that guy was in line for playing time next year, or this, that, and the other thing. You just don't know what their personal situation is, and you don't know what their relationship is with their position coach, for instance. So there's so many things that go into it. I'd be surprised if there's more than five by the time the game is played on the 29th, but you just never know.
But one thing I'll say, and Kim and Chris, I shared this with you from a dad of one of the players that we thought could be leaving. I reached out to him and just said, hey, you know, is there anything I need to be aware of? And the dad said, hey, he doesn't have hardly any film and that we can show anybody. So how can we go anywhere? You know, how can he go anywhere? Because he doesn't have film. And so, you know, this and you know, it's something where you've just got to say, wow, that kind of makes sense. If they don't have film, they can't go anywhere. What the hell are they supposed to do? You know?
Yeah. And Scott, they've put out a couple offers to guys who've entered the portal.
Yeah. One was a tight end out of Cal Poly. Josh, I believe it's Cuevas is how you say his name. And then Holmes, is it Gavin Holmes out of West Virginia? Or I'm sorry, Wake Forest. That got an offer. That's a corner prospect. And that was a guy that I had on my list on Monday of guys that Washington was vetting. I didn't have Cuevas up there. So, and you might see a running back offered. You know, Washington's really looking at that East Carolina kid, Keaton. They're looking at him pretty strongly too.
Keaton Mitchell.
Yeah, I believe. Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting because Courtney Morgan had a tweet that he put out a few days ago, basically talking. He put a GIF out there of, I don't remember. I think Boiler Room is the movie, the actual movie, but it basically portrayed them as, you know, making deals and stuff with some of these portal guys that are going on. So there's no question that the Washington staff is right in the thick of all this. And I'll be very curious when the smoke goes away and the dust settles and all this stuff, how many guys they will have really gone hard at in this portal. And obviously there's going to be a correlation between how many guys they really seriously go for and then how many guys they lose that end up in the portal.
And we didn't mention the tight end out of Michigan too, Eric All. And it sounds like there's a possibility he might visit this weekend, but it also, the rumors that are going on out there right now are that he's going to follow the transfer quarterback from Michigan who went to Iowa. Sounds like he might be headed down there. So
yeah, well, at Michigan, he's got the ties with Courtney Morgan, you know, the recruiting coordinator at Washington. So I'm sure Courtney knows him well. But Chris, I'm sure you'll update the numbers here pretty quick because everybody thinks that they want to take this guy. But when you take a look at the numbers, I mean, they can only have 85 on scholarship, you know, so they definitely need some attrition, not only with guys graduating, but they need some more guys to enter the portal if they're going to take more guys, because we're still looking at, are you guessing, Scott, 3 to 4, like a DB, a tight end, a running back, and possibly two DBs?
Yeah, somewhere in that range, three or four guys.
Yeah, so you just can't take everybody. You got to get to the number of 85.
Yep. And Washington isn't just going to do a USC and mass, or what Deion Sanders is doing in mass exodus, guys. These are kids who put in blood, sweat, and tears for this staff this year. They're not just going to cut them loose.
Yeah. Colorado had a commitment from the tight end from O'Day.
Tucker Ashcraft.
Yep. Is that something that somebody that Washington would look at?
Well, they did. And they didn't offer him. He's a preferred walk-on guy if he's anything, in my opinion. Everybody, when we heard that Washington was looking at him, it raised some eyebrows from some of the local scouts out here. So it isn't that he's a bad player. He's kind of maxed out talent-wise. So and you're usually not taking those guys. If you're a school like Washington or Washington State, even you're not taking those kind of guys. Maybe you're taking them out as a preferred walk on and saying, hey, come in, we'll let you play. We'll let you possibly earn a scholarship and see where things go. But I think Tucker Ashcraft would be better served going to an FCS school and being able to flourish there.
But you could sell to that kid because you just point to Jack Westover, who was a walk-on. I don't think he's an athlete, the Jack Westover.
No, he isn't. Not at all.
Yeah. So. But any other recruiting updates, Scott? Anybody in this weekend? Anything to keep an eye on?
So the one guy that we know that's coming in for sure is Keith Reynolds. He's already committed to Washington. He's out of Adelanto. He's a small wide receiver, but very quick. Good return man. Good kind of in space. He's more of a slot guy.
Giles Jackson type?
And, not as thick as Giles Jackson, but maybe a little quicker than Giles Jackson. And maybe a little more dynamic as an athlete than Giles Jackson. Not that Giles Jackson is any slouch athletically, but this guy's a little bit more stop start than he is. And on Sunday when we met with Kalen DeBoer after the announcement that they were going to the Alamo Bowl, he was asked a question about recruiting, and he said he expects a few, or I think he said a few, but it might have been a couple official visitors to come in this coming weekend. So we're still trying to figure out who some of those other guys might be. So,
all right. And then I know we're coming up on signing day, not anticipating if anything happens, I'm guessing it's going to blindside us, something we're not expecting.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it would be a surprise if anything surprised us.
All right.
I hate to put it that way, but that's.
Yeah. Well, and also remember, guys, we've got a couple weeks here. You know, it's 13 21st.
Days.
13 yeah, it's,
days.
It's well, almost 2 weeks then.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's not until the 21st, whereas, you know, typically it would be like a week ahead in most years. So, you know, typically it would be a little quicker. You wouldn't have as much potential for movement like these first couple weekends, because you got to remember, and this goes back to Kim's thought about how things have changed and how fast it's going. It's, you know, these first two weekends in December were always the monster weekends. These were the ones where they wanted to roll out the red carpet because the regular season was over. You could really dedicate 24/7 to recruiting the guys you needed to, putting the finishing touches on them, coaches going in for their in-homes. Because DeBoer has been out on the road all week. I mean, there's been pictures of him on Twitter from high school coaches and in-home visits and all these other things going on. So these guys have been trying to do all this stuff at the same time. But now it's literally like putting the cherry on top of the sundae. Whereas in the past, these first 2 weeks in December were all about making sure the entire sundae was put together. Now it's been like the entire sundae has been put together like at the end of July. And so that's where it's so different than what it used to be. But again, with 2 weeks left until, or almost 2 weeks left until that first day of the mid-year signing period, there's still going to be a lot of twists and turns. But I think it has more to do with the portal now than it does with high school guys.
By the way, I think DeBoer is probably going to do his in-home with Diesel Gordon tonight because he's down in Texas anyway.
That's the thing that guy's been, you, Kim, you want to talk about your schedule in terms of going places and traveling and whatnot. DeBoer's schedule this week must have been just off the rails.
Yeah, but he's flying private. Come on now.
That is true. It's completely different.
Yeah, that's completely different. So,
well, we could tell people about your story about flying private this last week.
We're not going there.
No, we're not going there.
But anyways, also tomorrow night, 6 o'clock tip off, Gonzaga, Washington. Does Gonzaga look a little more vulnerable right now than maybe they have the past couple of years?
Well, it seems like it if you go by the win-loss record, for sure. But the other thing is they've played I'm sure their strength of schedule has got to be at the top, if not the top.
Yeah.
I mean, they've played everywhere. They played everybody. And so, you know, they're getting more than battle tested for their regular season in the WAC. But yeah, when you lose a guy like Chet Holmgren and some of these other guys, it feels like maybe there's a chance that they're gettable. But man alive, they were, Washington almost got them the last time they played in Spokane. So they, I think the guy, I think it was Hachimura was the guy that made the shot at the very, very end to beat Washington. But they had a heck of an opportunity, and they played them. They played them straight up all the way to the very end of that game. So I know they're going to have their work cut out for them. And obviously losing Frank Kepnang for the season is a huge blow for them. But, you know, they've got pieces in place. They should be able to compete.
Yeah, losing Frank and then Noah Williams still being out, they've just – I mean, if Washington has a chance to win that game, Braxton Mia just cannot foul out. He cannot be in foul trouble, and that's been his bigaboo all year long. So if he gets in foul trouble, they're going to have to put Jackson Grant on Drew Timmy, and that just doesn't sound very not ideal.
I know it sounds easy for me to say, Kim, but when you're 7-1, why don't you just stay on the ground? Just put your hands up. I never understood why guys that are so tall always feel the need like they've got to jump to do everything.
And well, if it was that easy, Chris, they'd all stay on the ground.
I'm saying there's something innate that people just feel the need to jump, whether it's because they get that exhilaration of blocking shots all the time and all that. But I'm telling you, man, if he could just keep his feet on the ground, that would eliminate probably half the fouls that he takes every single game.
So if I took you down low and I pump fake, would you go for it?
Well, yeah, because I'm like 5'8". I'm not 7'1".
All right. Just looking forward to that game tomorrow night at 6:00. So your final thoughts, Chris Fetters, want to wrap it up?
Yeah, no, should be a huge game tomorrow night in Spokane. Kennel will be rocking for sure. So that'll be a great atmosphere for them to play in. I know they're looking forward to it, but yeah, next couple weeks are going to be chock full with information coming out of the portal. I do believe that I agree with Scott that we were kind of expecting a little bit more information and maybe some more information on guys that were going to make decisions. But now with the way the culture is and the way things are going, I just don't know if it's because the coaches are out on the road and whatnot that maybe they've delayed talking to some of the current players in the team until maybe just a little bit later. When they're on campus and they're, you know, they've got a chance to sit down and really discuss their futures. So hopefully that information will come out in the next couple of weeks. But this signing period should be a really, really interesting one. And obviously the recruitment of Lincoln Kienholz will be very, very interesting to see if he's kind of put into a position where he feels like he has to go ahead and sign a letter of intent somewhere, whether it's Washington or Ohio State.
Scott Eklund, wrap it up.
Yeah, I mean, I echo pretty much everything that Chris said. You know, it's an interesting time, man. You're 13 days away from signing day. Thought you had everything wrapped up, especially with your quarterback, probably the cornerstone of pretty much any class is your quarterback. And now it doesn't look like he's going to sign anywhere, or if he does, it'll, you know, I don't know. It's really confusing, especially with him not talking to anybody anymore. So it's you're just kind of reading the tea leaves more than anything. And but you know, it's going to be a fun last 13 days. We're going to have a really crazy time on the 21st, talking about the guys that Washington signs and all that kind of stuff. So just stay tuned here to dogman.com because we'll have you covered wall to wall. We'll be doing a lot of national stuff as well as Husky stuff and probably a lot of Pac-12 stuff too.
Hey, Scott, last count. I know it's just like you said, keep it tuned in here. At your last count, how many stories did we do last month?
I want to say it was close to 150, somewhere around there.
I thought it was more than that.
It was way more than that.
Oh, it was? Okay. Yeah.
I thought it was 180 before Thanksgiving, right after Thanksgiving.
Okay. Yeah. And then it slowed down a little bit. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, we're doing 5-6 stories a day and then plus the network stuff. So I think in the times you get one or two, mm-hmm. sometimes you go without. So, you know, if you're looking for your Husky football fix, you know, just keep it here at dogman.com and also go to the Dogman Radio Archives. I know a lot of you are commuting and on the way to work, on the way back to work. It's great listen. Just go back in the archives and listen to some of those Dogman radios. And that's good for commute or if you're just doing work around the house. Just like you said, look at that Dogman radio archive. And we got to send a big shout out, you guys. So all three of us, I'm sure you two will join me in wishing somebody happy birthday. Andy, we wish you the best. Happy birthday today to our good friend Andy, and hope he's doing well down in San Francisco. And I'll make sure and talk to him sometime today, and I'll give him the best for you two guys as well. So I should go down and see him and play the Olympic Club. What do you think?
I think that's always been on the cards, hasn't it?
Yeah, I got to get down there and see him. So anyways, just like I said, you know, Chris and Scott have worked their tails off here. It just seems like we get busier when football season stops. And after that, we just tend to get really busy. So it's going to be busy, you know, now till signing day and then up through the bowl game and everything. So anyways,
well, what people don't understand is during the season, a lot of our media stuff is kind of, I don't want to say low-hanging fruit, but I mean the coaches are available, the players are available, we're able to do stuff all week long.
We're on a schedule.
Yeah, but once the season is over with, we have to get real creative to come up with all of our stuff. So you know, that's when you're going to be getting a lot of your what do you call it, Kim, trying to take information in like a fire hose, you know, and that's where we start doing it. And we're already talking about 2024, guys, but starting on the 22nd and going forward, we'll be talking about a lot of 2024 guys moving forward.
And hey, guys, real quick, we know that Caleb DeBoer was the Pac-12 coach of the year with Jonathan Smith. He was named the AP Pac-12 coach of the year just by himself. No Jonathan Smith, just Kalen DeBoer. So congratulations to Coach DeBoer.
Yeah, like you were saying, Scott, you know, when during football season, we've pretty much got a schedule for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We know what our schedule is going to be, and then we've got the game. So we pretty much have 4 days out of the week on schedule, and we have a content schedule. But when the season's over, yeah, there's no schedule. It's just like, okay, we're going to leave, and when all three of us are gone, that's when stuff happens. So and then we're scrambling. So. Mm-hmm. Anyways, just keep it here. And again, just take a look at those Dogman Radio archives. Lots of good stuff in there. So for all of us at Dogman.com, I'm Kim Grenolds, along with Chris Fetters and Scott Eklund. Go Dogs.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.